Hello and Happy New Year to everyone gathered here and those who are watching or listening online. So glad that you all could be together and join us today. I want to jump right into our teaching by reading from John chapter 1, beginning in verse 35. This is a longer than usual reading, so please pay attention. There will be a test afterward. John chapter 1, verse 35, it says, "The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, 'Look, the Lamb of God.' And when the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, 'What do you want?' They said, 'Rabbi,' which means teacher, 'where are you staying?' 'Come,' he replied, 'and you will see.' So they went and saw where he was staying, and they spent the day with him." It was about 4 p.m. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah," that is the Christ, the Anointed One. And he brought his brother to Jesus. And Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter. And the next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida, and Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth? Can anything good come from there?" Nathanael asked. "Come and see," said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said to him, "Here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. And Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." And then Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus said, "You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. But you will see greater things than that." He then added, "Very truly, I tell you, you will see heaven open, and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." The scene opens with John, who is John the Baptist, or John the Witness, pointing others to Jesus. In this instance, it's two of his very own disciples. It's a bit unusual for a teacher or a rabbi to recommend that some of his disciples follow someone else. Kind of like a preacher sending people to another church. Although we sometimes do get together and discuss trades with one another. "Okay, I'll give you two elders for one nursery volunteer. Still not enough? I'll throw in a deacon to be named later to sweeten the pot." But here John is doing his one job, the one job he sent into the world to do. He's pointing others to Jesus, the Lamb of God, who's going to bring about this new exodus and rescue the whole world from slavery to sin and death. And no one else knows this about Jesus yet, but John does, and he's pointing him out. And so these two disciples of John start following Jesus, literally walking behind Jesus as Jesus is walking along. And Jesus turns around and says, "What do you want?" And they say, well, where are you staying? Which really seems like a bit of an odd or awkward question. What do you want? Where are you staying? Huh? Did Jesus catch them off guard? Where are you staying? It's actually more of an indirect request for hospitality. You know how sometimes people will ask if the food you're eating is any good? What are they really asking? Hey, is that any good? Indirectly, they're asking for a bite. Is that any good? Yeah, give me a bite. Where are you staying? Do you have room for us? Can we spend some time with you? And Jesus says, come and see. And they go and spend the rest of the day with Jesus. Eating, drinking, talking, playing video games, watching football. Who knows? John doesn't tell us. We just know that after spending some time with Jesus, they come back and believe they have found the Messiah. He's the one. And one of those two disciples named Andrew, he's got a brother named Simon Peter. Yeah, that Peter. And Andrew finds his brother Simon and brings him to Jesus. And Jesus gives him a nickname, Peter. And then the next day, Jesus calls a guy named Philip to follow him. And Philip follows a guy named Nathanael and says, we found the one we've been waiting for. It's Jesus of Nazareth. And Nathanael's immediately skeptical. Nazareth? Can anything good come from Nazareth today? Be like, Forney? Can anything good come from Forney? And all Philip says is, come and see. Sometimes the best way to respond to a skeptic is not to argue, but to invite. Just come and see and let Jesus do the rest. And Jesus makes a believer out of Nathanael. And then the scene closes with Jesus saying to his new disciples, you are going to see some amazing things when you follow me. And he describes himself as a ladder or a staircase bridging the gap between heaven and earth. It's a callback to that story out of Genesis 28 when Jacob has a dream where he sees a ladder or a staircase and the angels are ascending and descending. Jesus describes himself as that bridge between heaven and earth. And that declaration then sets the scene for everything else that comes in the Gospel of John. Now, this is a fairly straightforward account of how Jesus recruits his first disciples. And yet, like so many other stories and conversations throughout the Gospel of John, there's almost always a deeper meaning to be found below the surface reading of the story or the conversation. And this exchange between Jesus and his disciples is a great example. When Jesus says, what do you want? Some translations say, what are you looking for? That is a simple question that can become increasingly difficult to answer the deeper you go. If it's a barista at Starbucks asking, what do you want? That's a simple, easy question to answer, even if the drink you order is not so simple or easy. I'll have a triple espresso, two Splenda, skimmed goat foam, latte, easy on the foam, please. Was it the goat? Which one was it? All of it. But if it's a philosopher, or a performance coach, or a counselor, or a therapist, or a teacher, or a rabbi asking the question, what do you want? It can be difficult to put that answer into words. What are you looking for? why are you following me? What do you want? Becomes a question about our dreams, our hopes, our goals, about the purpose and meaning of life, about the focus of our existence. It becomes a question about what we long for in our heart of hearts. What do you want? On the surface, it's this polite question from Jesus. Seems to catch the disciples off guard. Two guys following him. He says, what do you want? What are you looking for? How can I help you? But on a deeper level, he's probing their hearts already. Their hearts, their hopes, their dreams. He wants to know, why are you following me instead of John? What do you believe I can do for you that John or anyone else can't? What are you looking for out of your life? What do you want from me? And then most English translations obscure the deeper meaning of their response when they say, where are you staying? The word in the original language can also be translated as abide. And so what they really ask Jesus is, where do you abide? And that word that gets translated as abide shows up throughout the Gospel of John, and it is a big time, heavy theological concept and idea in John. Where does Jesus abide? So later on in John 15, Jesus will tell his disciples just before he's crucified, abide in me and my teachings, just as I abide in my Father. John 15, verse 9, he says, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. So, abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Where does Jesus abide? Where is Jesus staying? They're not just asking a question about where Jesus sleeps or where he lives. They're asking a question about his relationship, his connection to God. And when Jesus responds by saying, come and see, he's not just giving them a hospitable invitation to come and share a meal with him and spend a little bit of time. He's inviting them, come and see. Come and follow me and learn from me the answers to life's most important questions. Come and see. Come and learn from me the meaning and purpose of life. Come and learn how to abide in the Father's love just as I do. Come and see what God is like. Come and see what the love of God is like. Come and see how the love of God overcomes sin and death. Come and watch me bridge this gap between heaven and earth, God and humanity. Come and see. Now, do the disciples know that all of this is going on in this conversation, in the moment they're having this conversation with Jesus? Absolutely not. They are totally clueless to the deeper levels of meaning here. They have no idea. What they want or what they think they want is not what they really need. They want Jesus to be a certain kind of Messiah. And he will not be the Messiah they want him to be. But he will be the Messiah they need. And it takes them a long time to figure this out. The longer they follow Jesus and listen to what he has to say, the more they ponder his teachings, the more they watch him, his way of life and his way of death, the deeper the meaning they're able to find in these seemingly innocuous conversations. And even then, it all doesn't fall and click into place until after the resurrection. Have you ever had an experience where you look back on it and the fingerprints of God are all over it, but you didn't realize it at the time? But now in hindsight, you can see it so clearly. God was there, God was moving, God was doing, God was teaching, God was saying, but you missed it at the time, but now it's there. It's like what Jacob says in Genesis 28, after he has his dream of that ladder or staircase between heaven and earth. Jacob says in 28:16, surely the Lord was in this place, and I did not know it. Surely the Lord has been a part of this all along, but I didn't realize it. Oh, that's what's going on. That's what was happening in that conversation, in that interaction, in that encounter, in that situation, in that difficult moment. God was speaking, God was moving, God was there, but I didn't see it. But now I see it so clearly in hindsight. This happens for the disciples over and over again in John. John will even tell us a few times, yeah, the disciples didn't understand this until after the resurrection. Today I invite you to insert yourself into this conversation. Imagine that you are having this conversation with Jesus. You're walking along, following him, and he turns around and he looks you in the eye. And he wants to know, what do you want? What are you looking for? Sit with that question a bit. What do you want? Really want? What do you want Jesus to do for you? What do you want from Jesus? The way we answer that question largely depends on our age and experience and our circumstances in life. Ask a 6-year-old and they'll want a toy. Or some sugar, or maybe a toy coated with sugar. Ask a 16-year-old, they'll want a toy, but much more expensive. But what about at 26 and 46 and 66 and 86? The answer to the question begins to change, doesn't it? What I thought I wanted 10 years ago is not what I want today. And I suspect that what I will want in 10 years from now is not what I think I want today. Just like the disciples, the longer we follow Jesus, the longer we pay attention to what he's up to in this world, the more likely we are to begin to see the difference between what we think we want and what we really need. And what we really need, strip it all away. The goals, the aspirations, the ambitions, the plans, strip it all away. And what we really need is to know where Jesus abides. Because the answer to that question shows us what God is like. The answer to that question shows us how we can abide in God's love just as Jesus does. And Jesus isn't content to tell us. He wants to show us, and so he invites us. Come and see. Come and see. It's an invitation for would-be disciples. It's an invitation for skeptics. It's an invitation for seekers who have more questions than answers. And today, it is a question for you and for me. An invitation for you and for me. Come and see. And together, we'll respond to this invitation by following Jesus through the Gospel of John. And as we do, may we discover that living in God and having God live in us is not just what we really want, it's also what we desperately need.